Hello, this is Dr. Leo Galland, and today we'll be mapping microbial myths and misconceptions on the 15-Minute Matrix.
Welcome to the 15-Minute Matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today and in the next episode, I'll be talking with Dr. Leo Galland. This is a two-part special edition that you're not going to want to miss. Dr. Leo Galland is one of the founders of functional medicine. In fact, he received the Linus Pauling Award back in 2000 for creating basic principles of functional medicine. A graduate of Harvard University and New York University School of Medicine, Dr. Galland is board certified in internal medicine. He's published numerous scientific articles and textbook chapters and a total of 6 books. His most recent book, The Allergy Solution, is an international bestseller. Dr. Galland is a pioneer in studying the impact of intestinal microbes, the gut microbiome, and intestinal permeability on health and disease. With this expertise, it will come as no surprise to you that Dr. Galland and I are mapping microbial myths and misconceptions in this 2-part special edition of the 15-Minute Matrix. Ladies and germs, let's get started. Dr. Galland, you are definitely one of my heroes in the world of functional medicine, a true thought leader in the field, and I'm so honored to have you here with me today. Welcome.
I'm excited to be talking to you, and thank you for having me on.
Yes. So we're talking today about microbial myths and misconceptions. And oddly, I find that there are practitioners who still think that leaky gut or intestinal permeability is a myth. Can you first speak into that?
Sure. I've been working with leaky gut, not a name that I like, by the way. I prefer increased intestinal permeability, for about 25 years or so, and actually helped the precursor of Genova, Great Smokies, developed that test, which is based on very solid scientific research. I think the big issue with leaky gut is the idea that leaky gut is somehow a disease or a syndrome. It's a manifestation, and so. The thing that's been really gratifying to me in that area actually has been seeing a total change in mainstream medicine, especially among researchers and academics who recognize that leaky gut is one of those phenomena that just cuts across every aspect of the matrix and plays an important role in a wide range of different conditions. In order to heal the leaky gut, you have to decide what the triggers are. That's at least the first step.
So what do you see as some of the myths around triggers related to intestinal permeability and some of the truths around triggers?
First of all, there are a wide range of triggers. And I would say that among functional medicine practitioners, there's generally a pretty good understanding of the ranges of triggers that can play a role. The thing that tends to drop out, actually, are the role of emotional triggers in leaky gut. And that is, there's a definite impact of increased intestinal permeability on mood and cognitive function and neurologic illness and symptoms. And it's very gratifying to me to see the pendulum swinging that way, because for so long this was ignored. I mean, maybe for 100 years it was ignored. But there is a reciprocal effect. And this has mostly been studied in rats, but the vagus nerve, stimulation of the vagus nerve can increase intestinal permeability. And, you know, so here, there's this other kind of misconception that, well, parasympathetic activity is all good and sympathetic activity is all bad. It's really a balance of the two. And excess vagal activity, at least in rodents, increases intestinal permeability.
So it's a balance of the vagal response that we need to have the permeability work in our favor?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, I think there's a lot more research to be done there. Of course, the vagus nerve is very sensitive to input from gut microbes. And one of the mechanisms by which intestinal microbes influence the brain is through the vagus nerve. And that can be good, it can be bad, and again, it depends on balance. I reviewed that about 3 years ago. I published a paper in the Journal of Medicinal Food called The Gut Microbiome and the Brain. It is available in full text online.
Great.
You can either go to my website, drgallen.com, or probably just go to the National Library of Medicine.
We'll link that in the show notes.
Great. And there's actually been a lot of work, new work that's been done in the past 3 years since it was published, which expands and probably deepens ideas I presented. But that paper, I think, gives a comprehensive, structured, and focused approach based upon available research at that time, and focusing on human research, because the truth is that that rodents are not humans in a lot of different ways, including their microbiome effects. And so I think it's really important to look at the human research.
So what other myths do you commonly encounter when you're speaking to practitioners about the microbiome or about pathogens in particular?
Well, the microbiome, it's the misconception is a tendency to view the microbiome kind of as, to view the relationship as a one-way street, especially when it comes to inflammation. Now, you know, and it's kind of strange for me to be saying this because for 30 years I've been looking at the microbiome as a key player in not only in intestinal health, but in systemic health. And again, it's great to see the research supporting those things that my colleagues and I were talking about decades ago. And in fact, I gave a presentation in the early 90s. It was about 8 hours on intestinal dysbiosis. And I just reviewed everything that was available in the medical literature up to that time, which was based on two types of studies. One were culture studies, and the other were biochemical studies of gut microbes. Now, the big change occurred about 10 or 12 years ago when all of this DNA technology was applied to the microbiome. But it still didn't change the basic questions, and there are two. And people tend to focus on one question rather than the other. So let me clarify that. The two questions about gut microbes are, one, who's there? And two, what do they do? And there's not a direct correlation between who's there and what they do. And the more important question is the question, what do they do? And just as an example of this, there's studies done with human infants over the first 2 years of life. And there's a constant change in gut bacteria, in the gut microbiome over the first 2 years of life, which happens in all infants. The activities of the microbiome don't change. It's as if there's a factory that's running on three shifts, and the day shift leaves and the night shift comes in.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still doing the same thing. It's still making the same products. So, an excess reliance on the taxonomy of the microbiome, I think it leads to a lot of clinical misconceptions. And that occurs to a large extent because that's the testing that's available right now.
And I was going to ask you, Dr. Gallen, what is your perception as the technology gets more and more advanced and more focused on who's there?
I think it leads to a lot of misconceptions. That is, I see a lot of patients who, you know, they'll show up with a low Firmicutes to Bacteroides ratio. Well, that's just a reflection of their diet. I see a lot of patients who are on high protein, high fat, low carb diets. Of course, they're going to have a low Firmicutes to Bacteroides ratio. What does it mean? What does it mean for their body? It may not mean anything.
How do we know? How do we as clinicians know what matters and what doesn't?
Yeah, well, I think to the extent, frankly, I think that the what do they do part is more important. You can get a little glimpse into that looking at organic acids.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly looking at the pattern of short chain fatty acids, I think is important because there are differences in the impact of butyrate, propionate, and acetate, for example. Acetate's been associated with weight gain, propionate with weight loss. I mean, you know, just phenomena like that.
Right.
And the micrometabolome, I think, is really where the answers are going to lie. And they're just starting to figure out how to present that in a way that's of some clinical benefit, because one group of bacteria will create end products that impact the next group of bacteria. And so what I think is really important about the microbiome and its impact on conventional medicine is, in order to really understand it, you have to think ecologically. You have to understand that each of us is made up of several ecosystems which interact with one another and with the ecosystem in which we live, which is greater than we are, transpersonal, maybe interpersonal.
Absolutely. It must be interpersonal. And this is what I love about your work, Dr. Galland, is that you're a systems thinker, that it's never one thing in isolation. And one of the myths that you seem to be pointing out is that we're focused too much on the data as opposed to taking in what we can from the functional medicine and functional nutrition matrix, the whole, the terrain, the environment, everything that's impacting the individual, with the microbiome data being a piece of that.
Absolutely. And, you know, before there was Genova, I was a consultant to Great Smokies Diagnostic Lab, its precursor, and helped them set up the stool testing. And I used to get calls from doctors who would say things to me like, I have this patient who has four plus Klebsiella in his stool. What should I do about it? My response was always, well, tell me what's going on with this patient.
Right.
Most of the time, the 4-plus Klebsiella didn't mean anything. It was just a laboratory number. It would be like saying, well, I have a patient who has a cholesterol of 250. What should I do?
Right.
You know, I mean, the individual, the family history, the diet, you know, I mean, so that's very important. Another key aspect of the microbiome and its relationship to inflammation, I want to emphasize, because I almost never see it mentioned even by researchers. The fact is that even though there are organisms that are pro-inflammatory and the microbiome can shape inflammation, inflammation shapes the microbiome. When you have an inflammatory response anywhere in the body, and especially in the gut, you get a production of nitric oxide, which breaks down into nitrates. And so inflammation creates a high nitrate milieu, which favors the growth of certain kinds of organisms, in particular organisms that are in the proteobacteria family, phylum, which include most of the major gram-negative pathogens, the Enterobacteriaceae, you know, E. coli and
right.
Klebsiella. These are inflammatory organisms, but they thrive in an inflammatory milieu. And it makes sense. After all, if you're an organism that likes an inflammatory milieu, why wouldn't you try to get your host to give you one?
Things were getting so juicy with Dr. Gallen that I wanted to keep going. I know you're not going to want to miss the second part of this conversation. We'll release that second part next week, so be sure to tune back in. The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes, including the second part of this series, at www.15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to get my therapeutic diet matrix and be notified each time there's a new podcast episode, please go to www.15minutematrix.com/diets. That's www.15minutematrix.com/diets. And I want you to email us. We want to know who you'd like to hear on the podcast and what you'd like to see mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix. You can email us at ask@15minutematrix.com. Plus, you've heard the news, right? We're rebranding. If you're familiar with the practitioner training division of the Functional Nutrition Alliance called Holistic Nutrition Lab, you'll want to know that we're transforming into the Functional Nutrition Lab. Stay tuned for more details on why we're rebranding and what it means for you.
And okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, have a great day, Ann.
You too. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.